For me, it was one of the best performances that I saw after 4.5 years on Tottenham.
Time for another That's a Dive. Welcome, Tad Potters. Here we go. Another That's a Dive. Back in the studio. And I'm going to apologize up front. Been running around today, so eating a late lunch. You might hear some smacking when producer Jorge is enlightening us and PJ's taking over. It's been a while. I feel like we've been away for a while.
You did the we had the off weekend.
Yeah.
After the long festive fixtures run, and you did the you did do the combo pod with.
That's right.
You technically crashed it, but it was your podcast too. It was a combo.
Well, so yeah, they crashed mine. So why was I apologizing?
It's a little awkward.
It's hard to understand.
Awkward, yeah.
I like we've had Mustinho, we have R2K. Uh huh. Right.
And you want to get it was R3K the one you want to work in.
Yeah, we got to get low in there for R3K.
Yeah.
And then Earl and I have to. I mean, that's and then we did it and we have it. It's all there.
Do all different combos.
Yeah. So we're back to, I feel like we've been all over the place format-wise. We're back to three topics. We're back to me blowing through the whistle. We're just back to our roots. Mm-hmm. We're getting back to the basics. So speaking of that, little housekeeping, get to the reviews. Thank you guys again. Keep doing it. Keep hitting the reviews. Keep reviewing. You don't have to like the show. You don't even have to say you like the show. You just have to review the show, and you also have to say what stadium you've never been to that you want to go see a game in. And this one, the one for this week is Jeff Heller. And he said, I never had any luck with podcasts capturing my attention, but being a soccer lover, Kyle easily explains and talks about topics perfectly. I recommend it to everyone who loves the sport and wants to know more things or more about things happening off the pitch. As an Arsenal fan, the one stadium I want to be at before I die is the Emirates. We've been there a few times since we've had the coverage. Mm-hmm. It's gorgeous.
Where do you rank it in terms of all the English stadiums?
Well, you know, it's not. It just doesn't feel very English. Mm-hmm. You know, it's. You know, it was kind of the new era when they moved from Highbury to the Emirates. It was in this era of moving away from the tight, you know, right on top of the field, old, historic. You might even have a pillar in your face that you have to look around stadiums that are beautiful, and there's still many of them. I mean, some big clubs have gone the route of just redo, refurbish, and build onto that old historic ground. So Old Trafford, Anfield, good examples of that. There's like the Craven Cottage, right? That's still the exact same thing and you know, just beautiful and iconic. The Emirates is the beginning of like the first tier being a gradual arc away from the field, a decent amount of distance from the field, but it doesn't bother you. It's a really beautiful stadium. And I think of all the perks and of all the good qualities of the Emirates, it's the pitch. I mean, it kind of is always when I go there. That's the thing I marvel at the most. I remember, you know, the first time we went there, I wanted desperately to just go walk out and stand on it because it was just perfect, manicured beautifully. And Old Trafford has that feel too. But, you know, like, you know, Stamford Bridge, sometimes we've been there and it's been a little bit ripped up. And Graham and Lee were talking about that on the broadcast this past weekend, saying the pitch looked a little run down. And Graham was joking that he could always count on it being muddy, which was the type of field he loved. Or Lee was saying that, and Graham said that they used to paint it green from time to time.
Really?
Yeah, because there was really no grass. They just painted the mud green. But yeah, the Emirates is a pretty stadium. And it helps that it's like right there in London, which, I mean, a lot of the stadiums are, but it's just in a cool location. There's a buzz around it. It's a great stadium. So get there, Jeff. Head over there.
Okay.
Make it happen. So Arsenal fans that will be nodding their head and saying, yes, I agree, beautiful, will hate that the first topic today is going to be Spurs, but they'll love why. So the topics today, we're gonna say goodbye to a person that graced that Stamford Bridge field recently.
And the Emirates.
And the Emirates, yeah. So Cesc Fabregas leaving the Premier League, leaving Chelsea Football Club, and going to Monaco to play for an old teammate of his, Thierry Henry. So we'll get into that, and we'll also say farewell to an incredible, one of the best goalkeepers all time, one of those guys where you don't know him, but you feel like he's just a good guy. Like, you'll find it hard to get someone to say a bad word about Petr Cech, but that's it. Hanging up the gloves, the boots.
At the end of the season.
At the end of the season. Mm-hmm. The helmet. It all. It's all
the helmet too. Yeah.
And I'm sure he stays involved. I would imagine.
You think with Arsenal or maybe Chelsea?
Yeah,
I mean, that's why again you said he's a well liked personality. He could end up anywhere. Again, maybe we should save this when we talk about it. But yeah,
I mean, Arsenal went and got Lehman that one time. So
yeah,
and he's not there anymore. And I remember that being an interesting one because I loved Lehman, but he seemed a bit as a player. And again, we make these calls. Let's not get too much into it. We'll save that.
That's our third topic.
Yeah. So that's the third topic that we already took some minutes out of. Chelsea. We're just going to talk Chelsea youngsters in the context of Christian Pulisic. We've touched this a little bit, but we're going to talk again about Christian Pulisic making the big move, $73 million move from Borussia Dortmund to Chelsea. But the first topic, big game. Spurs at Wembley facing a new Manchester United, a Ole Gunnar Solskjaer Manchester United, a completely turned around and somewhat reminiscent of an old Manchester United in the good way. They came and got a big result, 1-0 on the road, a Marcus Rashford end of the first half goal, and held out for a win. So let's talk about this from a Spurs angle first, and then get to Manchester United. This was a big game for Spurs, and can they shut up the doubters and stay in a title race? I mean, can they keep pace with a irresistible and runaway Liverpool, a imperfect but still, by comparison, the perfect everyone hopes to be Manchester City.
And right? Recently ruthless.
Yeah.
They're putting this ruthless streak together.
I feel like we're seeing a different Manchester City recently. I mean, mm-hmm. We're kind of seeing like a gritty, kind of nasty, like mm-hmm. and high intensity getting into tackles from players. You don't expect that from Manchester City. So yeah, could Spurs keep up with that? And I've been banging their drum for a long time now saying they can. And I'm not giving up on that. I definitely wasn't giving up on that based off of one 20-minute period against Wolves, which was another disappointing home loss at Wembley. That one obviously more disappointing for obvious reasons than this one. But I'm still not ready to give up on Spurs having what it takes to keep up with the group ahead of them. I expect some bumps in the road for Liverpool. Liverpool have been able to hop over potholes and bumps, and they've just been able to ride a touch of inconsistency at times and average performances at times and get results. So that's not an insult. I mean, I think Liverpool is the best team in the Premier League right now and deserves to be where they are, but I expect them to slip up. Like I expect that to come and for them to allow or offer an opportunity to the two chasing teams, Manchester City and Spurs, to gain ground. Now, losing to Manchester United at home hurts, and for Spurs fans or more so, you know, non-Spurs fans, this will be confirmation that they can't do it, right? This will be the, see, we told you, you know, they're not going to be able to keep up, the same old Spurs. It for sure, 100%, is not the same old Spurs. And it's a shortcut to thinking to say, see, they disappointed again because it was actually a really good performance. And we opened the show with Pochettino. He maybe went a bit far, but listen, it's his team. He knows more about this side. He's watched them. He's analyzed them. He said, what was it? He said best performance in the 4.5 years he's been there, right?
Yes.
Or one of them?
And we didn't play the full clip. He was mainly referencing the second half because he admitted the first half wasn't the best. But the second half, they completely were basically dominated. They just happened to come up against the best goalkeeper in the world on one of his best days.
Yeah, I think ultimately, you're going to have a bad stretch. You're going to have a bad few minutes. And it wasn't bad. Manchester United didn't create a ton in the first half. Now they were kind of set up not to. And here's what we have to explain, because this might sound like, oh, all of a sudden you're fine with sitting back and parking the bus. To kind of a layman or someone with confirmation bias, they could say that's just a counter. That's what Jose did, counter, sit back, and it wasn't. Now, the stats will tell you Manchester United, before Ole Gunnar Solskjaer took over, covered the least ground in the Premier League, ran the shortest distance of any Premier League team. They're working harder, and this was the first test for Manchester United. And they made things difficult. And I'll get on to Manchester United in a second. They made things difficult for Spurs. So the first half, I give that more to a really good, sound Manchester United performance and a strategy that surprised, I think, Pochettino, because Ole Gunnar Solskjaer, not only has he not been there for a long time, the opposition, and this was everyone's complaint, the opposition wasn't strong enough to be more cautious. I mean, a lot of what we've seen from and fans have responded to is go after it, high press. You'll concede, and that's okay because we're a better team, and we will outperform, we will outshoot, we will outscore our opponents. And everyone loved that because Sir Alex Ferguson had a little bit of that risk and lack of balance in his teams. You know, they would concede, but they were just relentless, right? Now they had to come up with a defensive game plan because Spurs are a better coach team in that they've been, you know, this is a project that's been going on a long time. They're at home. They're performing much better this season. They have their weapons. They were going to be the instigators. They were going to be the ones that dominated the game with the ball. So the strategy was great from Ole Gunnar Solskjaer showing that he had a plan, and I'll get to the plan in a second. So Spurs, what was impressive was they tried to break through. They stuck with the plan. Losing Sissoko kind of threw things in turmoil a bit, and then in the second half there was a slight tweak for Pochettino because he realized that they were being stymied by that shift for Manchester United of not really having a central forward, and defensively especially having Martial go a little bit right and Rashford a little bit right, Martial a little bit left, and Lingard kind of take care of the deep playmaking role and cut off Winks and others. They switched, and they were excellent in the second half, Spurs. So they perform well. De Gea had one of those days, and you got to kind of throw your hands up. The thing I worry most about with Spurs is the Harry Kane injury that was just announced. Mm-hmm. Now, again, ankle ligament damage.
Yep.
And they're saying March.
Yep. When it'll return to training.
Yeah. So, I mean,
it could be a little longer.
We've said this every single season. We've said this, and we've never really seen them without Harry Kane for a stretch. Mm-hmm. What happens when there's no Harry Kane? Here's what's coinciding with it. Son leaves too. Mm-hmm. So they lose Harry Kane and Son for a long time, for a good amount of fixtures, right? Mm-hmm. Son would be the best option to replace Harry Kane. So now you're kind of in the Llorente, who's just a real last-minute, totally different style solution. Or you push players up there that haven't gotten a lot of reps. Yeah. You know, Mora can play that role, and he's played it as a partnership rather than a lone striker. I think you could even use Dele Alli there.
I was going to say, in the past, we've seen Dele up there with Kane. Not this season as much, but in past seasons.
It's a real departure,
yeah.
Right? So here's what worries me even more, though. The Harry Kane ankle injury. He's had a lot of ankle ligament injuries, and most of them he comes back so quickly. And as someone who suffered a really bad ankle ligament injury, you don't recover. I mean, ligaments don't go from torn to fine without surgery. You know, they stay weak, they stay inflamed, they stay hurt, especially if you don't take the time to come back. And ankle tape and other artificial means stabilize it. And if I'll tell you, hips ended up taking the game away from me. I had two hip surgeries that I just couldn't play anymore. I was getting injections, and I was miserable. My body was falling apart. The next one that I think takes players out the most is ankles. I've had a couple of great players, Ben Olsen, Brian Mazanoff. I mean, some really good internationals that had to stop really early because of ankle issues. I think Jack Wilshere, unfortunately, is going to fall into this category too. Mm-hmm. If you keep reoccurring and chronic ankle ligament injuries based off of not taking the time to heal them, there is no ground to gain back there. So I just hope, I really do hope, they don't rush him back again. I really do hope we're not seeing a compounding effect of chronic ankle ligament damage, because that shortens careers. And, you know, that's first and foremost Harry Kane. I'd feel so bad for him if his career was cut short, having gone through that. And it's difficult. I mean, you know, depression and all sorts of things come on when you have your career taken away from you. But for us, selfishly, it'll rob us of an incredible player with immense talent. And we're going to miss some great years towards the end of his career.
Yeah, I mean, just kind of looking ahead to their schedule, just Son potentially could miss the next four matches if you include the League Cup.
Yeah.
If they keep advancing all the way to the final, so that could be. And that those matches, let me just pull them up real quick. It's Fulham in the Premier League, the second leg against Chelsea, Carabao Cup, Watford Premier League and Newcastle Premier League. So not with Kane, that doesn't look too bad. Mm-hmm. You can maybe get through that stretch okay. What I'm curious what you think for Kane is, so he right now he's expected to definitely miss the first leg of the Dortmund match, mm-hmm. and he could most likely miss the second leg depending on, you know, return to training.
Well, I worry about the timing of that fixture because that might be one of those carrots that forces him back
early. That's what I want. I guess first off, they're out of the title race now, think, right?
Yeah.
Let's just say they haven't. So Son will be back for that first Champions League game. Let's just say that first leg against Dortmund doesn't go well. They're at home. They end up losing or something. Any point in rushing Kane back that March game?
Champions League wise?
Yeah.
No.
And then at that point, do you even just almost say, hey, wait till April? Maybe wait till.
Yeah, because top four is going to be their. Unfortunately, it's another season where top four is going to be the best that they take out of it. I just. Rushing him back for Champions League, I just don't. No, I don't see it. They shouldn't do it. But sometimes players kind of, they dictate this. Let's just throw a Manchester United line in real quick before we switch on to the next subject. Mm-hmm. Hire Ole Gunnar Solskjaer.
Full time.
Yes, hire him. So I know they want Pochettino, right? Like, and I know they're waiting out for that. They're not going to get Pochettino.
Why do you think that?
Daniel Levy. Okay. There's no way that Daniel Levy lets Pochettino go without a deal that is so unilateral and unfair that they'll take everything from Manchester United to give up Pochettino. And also, Pochettino wants to go to Real Madrid. He does. He's never once said, yeah, Manchester United would be good, right? He's said endless amount of times, yeah, it's a dream. Mm-hmm. I'd love to coach at Real Madrid. So don't put all your eggs in that basket and miss out on what you have in front of you. And this game, everyone was saying, oh, wait until with like a big game. They haven't beaten anyone. There was a game plan there. So from the start, we've seen a game plan with Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. But I said it right after the first couple results. Just be patient because this isn't ultimately the game plan. He hasn't had time on the training field. He hasn't had a big match yet. What you're seeing is not strategy and tactics and working on the field. You're seeing what happens when you empower and you activate players through giving them freedom and believing in them and giving them a very basic game plan, but ultimately allowing them to express themselves as opposed to, you know, like disembodiment and like tearing players apart and giving them such a rigid game plan that they can't express themselves. So at a minimum, that's what we saw. What Spurs showed us is that there's more to it. There's more to it than that. And I just think ultimately, I remember when he got hired, we had our production call and everyone's like, nah, I mean, not everyone, but some people were like, oh, come, I mean, this is underwhelming. You know, this is a stopgap, blah, blah. And I said on the call, well, hold on a second. I know I don't have a ton of evidence to prove it, but I think this could be the next Manchester United coach because the spirit and the connection he has with the club in a weird way is going to make it easier for him to manage than Cardiff. I mean, this job will make even the biggest coaches feel pressure and feel the weight of Sir Alex Ferguson and all of that. None of that for Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. And he's also going to be given time and patience, but I think already you're seeing players show an immense amount of respect for him that no manager before him since Sir Alex Ferguson, Moyes, Van Gaal, Mourinho, none of them, right? I mean, even Giggs, like to a weird degree, it didn't even seem like Giggs got this sort of level of respect and admiration and appreciation from the most important players, right? From Pogba, from Rashford. And now he's choosing Rashford over Lukaku. Mm-hmm. And that's a huge call. And I've said many times, I think that Rashford is the better number nine option. And also, because you couldn't have done that game, that strategy, you couldn't have done that with Lukaku. Yeah. You couldn't have asked Lukaku to play off of the right and track back and also be a central forward when you needed them. Rashford is, he's their striker. Mm-hmm. And he's option number one. And when he's not scoring goals for a long time, then you think about replacing him. But he's your number one. And I just think give the job to Ole Gunnar Solskjaer. He's gonna prove to you he's better than what you've had before. He has an incredible respect for the club. You can hire a director of football and not upset him. He can't make that demand. If you go big, if you go, you know, Zidane and Allegri or even Pochettino, they're going to push back against all the things you know you need to do as a football club to modernize. Mm. And I think Ole Gunnar Solskjaer is going to say, listen, I'm for it. I mean, look at the coaching staff. I mean, the coaching staff come hug him instead of the other way around. Yeah. When Mourinho was there, Mourinho would seek them out and go hug them. I mean, Carrick is coaching and he's animated. All of it is evidence to say it sounds like a risk, but it's not. Go with this guy.
Well, I was going to add, the Robbies brought this up on their podcast yesterday. It's not just him, but the combination of Mickey Phelan and Ann Carrick, who you just mentioned, that threesome can kind of work as Solskjaer is the man in charge, but those two have a lot of input. Carrick's obviously got the connection with the current team because he's played with a lot of them. He's only just retired since last season. And Phelan has the connection with some of these players as well, but also from the Sir Alex days. So it's kind of combines the best of both worlds of Man United.
Yeah, and instead of being an outsider trying to add Manchester United ingredients, it's pure Manchester United.
Yeah,
but different. No one's going to try to be Sir Alex Ferguson, and no one knows that better than that group that's not happening.
The only thing I was going to counter with is, isn't this still part of the honeymoon period? This is really this is the first big test. It's only 6 matches in. Do we still need to see a little bit more, more consistency before they make that decision? And also, I just want to remind you about Chelsea 2012. They sack AVB, Andre Villas-Boas, bring in Roberto Di Matteo. He somehow wins the Champions League. Yeah. And everybody's in love with him. Another former, similar to Solskjaer, maybe not to the same extent, but a former Chelsea player. They give him the job, and it does not go well that first season in charge.
Yeah, but here's the thing. Winning a cup is luck. It is. I mean, even Pep Guardiola says that. Winning a cup takes a lot of luck.
And a lot of people consider that Chelsea team to be probably the worst team to win.
He also took over. I mean, they were down. I mean, they were in like the round of 16 or something, or even the quarterfinals when he took over.
It was
over,
the round,
right?
I believe it was the round. It was the round of 16, and they were losing going into the second leg against Napoli, and they came back and won.
Yeah, I mean, listen. I don't mean to diminish that. That's a huge accomplishment, but that doesn't tell you as much. The difference is that locker room still had Lampard, still had Terry, still had Cech, still had Drogba. That was the problem, is that you had incredible player power that essentially was running the club. And I don't mean that in a negative way. I just mean those guys helped turn that around for Di Matteo, right? Like, this is a group not linked to the past that is responding and changing overnight. I mean, this is not a managerial bounce. Mm-hmm. I know what you're saying, honeymoon phase. This is not a managerial bounce anymore.
Okay,
it's way too much, and now we have a lot of information. And I'm not saying like sign the contract now. Yeah. I'm just saying make the decision that this is your guy.
Mm-hmm. Be more open-minded.
Announce it at the end of the season. Yeah,
because it just seems like it's sort of like you mentioned when he was first named. It seemed there's no way that he would be given the full-time job.
No.
So he's definitely the interim, like he's been announced.
But they have him until the end of the season, and there's no reason to announce anything.
Yeah.
So there's no reason to announce anything. Mm-hmm. I'm just saying, in your minds, in the boardroom, don't tell anyone, but just say, this is our guy.
You don't think he has to achieve anything specific, like finish in the top four? Or I know you said cups are lucky. Does he have to do anything specific in the Champions League?
I'm saying this because I expect them to continue how it's going. Yeah. You know, if this turns around and they, you know, they finish seventh, of course you're going to question hiring this guy. Mm-hmm. I'm saying it based on the fact that I definitely don't think that's happening.
I mean, I'll be honest.
They can finish top four, and I mean, that's good enough, and that would be it.
I think they're going to finish third.
I mean, it's possible. It's absolutely possible.
I think they're going to finish third.
Especially with what just happened with Spurs and now what they're going through. Arsenal's got a hiccup. Chelsea, they have striker issues. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can see it. I mean, that was an 8-minute, by the way, just one thing on Manchester United. But Manchester United fans, I mean, aren't you glad that you don't have to listen to my Mourinho stuff anymore? But I did mention him.
He just.
When am I going to stop? Like, what? Give me an over-under. Like, how long are we going to go before I never mention Mourinho
again?
Well,
the problem is, this is another weird, not a really bold prediction, but Real Madrid's going to name him manager soon.
No way.
You're going to have to take back your Pochettino.
Here's the thing. There's no way that's going to happen.
Why not?
Do I have to do? Because I feel so confident, there's something that has to happen.
Oh, man. That, you got to do like a bet. Should we have the listeners?
Yeah, listeners.
So
like,
if Jose Mourinho is named manager of Real Madrid.
Yes, what does Kyle have to do? Yeah, so tweet me, at Kyle Martino. What do I have to do if Jose Mourinho is hired? It's not happening. All right, Chelsea youngster. So Pulisic moves to Chelsea next year. So he joins them this off season. most likely for, I mean, maybe even for their end of the year tournament or tournament tour where they go abroad, ICC, other things. I mean, there's a lot of summer activity, yeah. And he's going to be put in the mix right away, right? Mm-hmm. You know, my thoughts on this are clear. I don't think it's the best club for him. I don't think it's the best move, but I think he'll succeed there. And then the last thing, if he doesn't succeed there, it doesn't mean he's not mm-hmm. good enough for that level.
Yeah.
So that's ultimately my position here is, you know, there were better clubs. Liverpool would have been a better club, but I don't think that was an option anymore. I think Shaqiri's performances and other things in the price tag meant Liverpool weren't in anymore. Staying at Dortmund, I think, was becoming problematic. He's been replaced by an even more talented younger player. So he's had to split time a little bit, and was going to fight his way because he's good. And he and Sancho, they're really close. So they would have battled for time, and there's other slots that they can play at the same time. But I think Dortmund were ready to cash in, and so at that point, it was going to be time to move. The thing with Chelsea is just the track record of young players is the concerning mm-hmm. thing, right? So we went. When did we go over that? Was that on the two Robbies? I remember. I went on with Musto when
about
we talked
two,
about
almost 2 weeks ago. Yeah.
Yeah, and so you know the list, and here I've got it right in front of me. Yeah. So we've got Bakayoko, and that was the most recent one. So let's go chronologically from most recent to a while ago. So Bakayoko, Batshuayi. The other American, Miazga, who I think in 3 years has only had three Premier League appearances with them or something like that.
I think I saw something. Has he just been knocked down to Nantes B team? I think I saw something.
I don't know. I haven't seen that recently. Kennedy. That was 22-22-20. Now we're in a few teenagers, Kennedy and Zuma. Mm-hmm. You know, both of them going out on loan. Salah, who was 21 at the time. We know how that turned out. Which, again, I think proves my point, or doesn't prove my point, but backs my point up that, you know, failing there doesn't mean you're not going to mm-hmm. be a success or you're not good enough, right? Yeah. Schürrle was 22.
And you could say that one worked out because he was good. Help when he was on the team that...
Van Hinkle, he had a bad injury and all sorts of, like, I mean, that one definitely didn't work out. He was 20. He was loaned multiple times. Kevin De Bruyne, Eden Hazard even, you know, as a 21-year-old, but mm-hmm. you'd have to say, like... Ultimately, that's one of the success stories. I think Oscar is a success story. Mm-hmm. I think of the list, you'd say as a 20-year-old, he played a lot. He was trusted. He was successful. Victor Moses had to wait a long time and a positional change before. I don't know if Pulisic wants to be a wing back, but
yeah, and he had to wait through a few managers. Conte was really the first one who trusted him.
Yeah,
with Chelsea,
and then Lukaku was an 18-year-old, and essentially kept saying, I'm ready, I'm good enough, went away and scored a ton of goals mm-hmm. and kept coming back. I'm ready, I'm good enough, and it never happened. So you worry with the track record of a club that tends to gather talented young players as assets and hedge by loaning them out and maybe selling them at a profit or, you know, one out of 15 come good and you use them, which is cheaper than having to buy the finished product. The price they've paid for Christian Pulisic, I mean, it's finished product price, and he's not... So it tells us that, and listen, Sarri admits, you know, he said, yeah, I like him. He's a good player, but he's not behind this. This isn't his call. Yeah. So it tells us a couple things. One, they believe in him. They think he can play right away. And I do too. I mean, the Chelsea I'm seeing right now, Pedro and Willian and Christian Pulisic, I just don't see a lot between them. And you know, Pedro and Willian are old. I mean, those guys are coming to the end of their career. I mean, Pedro scored a great goal on the weekend, but like he fights for a starting position week in and week out. And with all the competitions they're in, he plays regularly in one of those spots. Eden Hazard starts regardless, mm-hmm. but as a number nine until they buy maybe Higuain or someone that they want for that role. So you have to expect Hazard's leaving. I mean, you have to expect that's part of this calculation, right? Mm-hmm. Is they can't get Hazard to do a big, long deal. They know they're going to lose him or whatever the issue is. So he's going to play. And also, like, the link to that past that, like, loans players out left and right, you know, Michael Emanuele's not there anymore. So Maria Granovskaya, who's calling a lot of these shots, is you're seeing a price tag that says, okay, he's American, so we're going to make money back on jerseys and American support in a huge market we're trying to grow into. But come on, that's not a lot of that price tag. A lot of that price tag is the kid's good enough to play at Chelsea.
Yeah.
And can help them.
I think the big thing that's come up lately is just Callum Hudson-Odoi. Because he's getting compared to Pulisic, which I'll be honest, I don't think it's right to compare them because Pulisic – hasn't been, and you mentioned he's not a finished product, but he has been a regular player for Dortmund the past three seasons or so now.
Sure.
I mean, and Hudson-Odoi really hasn't broken into Chelsea at all.
You can compare talent. Like, you could watch them in a one-off game and say, you know, which is better. Mm-hmm. And that's not how it works,
yeah.
Right? So Odoi's not nearly as battle-tested and polished, yeah. Right? Like, I mean, Champions League, mm-hmm. Bundesliga, yeah. Against Bayern Munich. I mean, big games, big scenarios, big competitions.
National team, too. I mean, I know Pulisic.
That matters. He was the most consistent and through a stretch,
yeah.
The best player for the men, mm. as a first time. And I'll tell you, you could scoff at it. You could say, come on, the quality of these teams going on the road in CONCACAF, and I've done it, mm-hmm. to qualify is a different beast. I'll tell you, some incredibly talented players. Mm-hmm. I mean, Jermaine Jones, for instance, Champions League. A lot of experience, very talented player, struggled in some qualifiers because it's just a different game. It's a different mm-hmm. beast. For Pulisic to handle that so well, being targeted also. I mean, teams were targeting him.
Yeah.
He's just – they're not taking a flyer on this guy. If he works at Chelsea or not, it still remains to be seen. But he's – the money says, and I believe, and I've seen enough of him, and I've asked players that have played with him and coached him, this kid's the real deal. That price tag is right, mm. based off of where he is in the international world of players his age. And it's a shrewd move by Chelsea that could be a really, really smart buy. Or they lose a little bit of money and Pulisic moves on to a lateral move to a mm-hmm. similar size club. Yeah, I could see him at like a Spurs. Yeah, I could see him going from Chelsea to Spurs or mm-hmm. something like that, right? Or to another league of that like top four type team.
Where do you think? So the reason I bring up the youngsters aspect of Chelsea, it's not just the young players as a concern going forward, but players like Hazard, you just mentioned. I just feel they're sort of at a crossroads, whether it's this January or the summer, depending on the moves they make. Let's just say they bring in Higuain in yeah. January, which has been rumored. Does that help maybe keep Eden Hazard?
To bring in a quality forward, I really don't, honestly, I don't think anything helps you keeping Eden Hazard.
Do you think Real Madrid will come up with the offer?
Yeah, that's gone. All that matters. Yeah. Because think about it. What are the chances? Here's what you have to realize. Real Madrid's a bigger club. I mean, anyone that argues differently is bleeding blue and needs to get their head checked. it's a bigger club. It's more prestigious. It's literally one of three clubs in the world.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
So it's enormous. So there's that, and he already has said it's a dream of his, he'd love to mm-hmm. play, right? There's that. The odds of you winning something at Real Madrid are a lot higher. The odds of you being considered world-class and being put on another stage a lot higher. But also the odds of them mm-hmm. buying a striker that's going to help you is a lot higher. So even if they get yeah. Higuain, listen, Higuain's towards the end of his career, so it's like don't think that moves the needle at all for him.
Yeah. Probably not. I guess the only thing is, if he comes in, he's played well with Sarri in the past when he was in Napoli. Maybe Hazard's like, you know what? I could stick here.
But for what? I mean, he's already won trophies there. So it's like, here's the question Rebecca asked me. She when we were on set a few mm-hmm. weeks back. Will this hurt his legacy? Like, could he stay and be a legend? And my answer is, he's not staying there forever.
Yeah.
So he's leaving at some point. I mean, even Frank Lampard. You know what I mean? Even John mm-hmm. Terry left yeah. at one point. He's leaving at one point.
Yeah.
So my thing is, I think his legacy's intact. I think who he is to Chelsea is gonna stay. Could it be improved slightly? Maybe, but it can't be hurt a lot.
Yeah, I mean, they left, but they are sort of viewed as one club players, aren't they? I mean, well, you're always gonna think of Lampard as a Chelsea player. You're always gonna think of Terry as a Chelsea player. Drogba even. And there are players that, I guess, that you can be, you know. Ronaldo, for example, yeah, you might think of him as a Real Madrid player, but he also had a good career at Manchester United, and we'll see how long he lasts at Juventus. You might not, associate him as a one club player.
But why does he want to be a one? I mean, who cares?
Well,
there is no such thing as a one club player. First of all,
well, true.
And in the modern day, it's extinct. So, Cristiano Ronaldo, right? Mm-hmm. He left in the prime of his game.
Yeah.
After one of the most remarkable seasons anyone's had in the Premier League, and he left Manchester United behind. He came back recently after having been gone for a decade?
Mm-hmm.
Came back to a standing ovation.
Yeah.
I mean, who, and what's happened since he left? I mean, the guy's an absolute international phenomenon, superstar, world class. He's in a category of two. You know, would that have been the case if you stayed at Manchester United? I don't know. But, like, winning with Real Madrid is different than winning with Chelsea. And that's a fact. And Eden Hazard likes that fact. And ultimately, that's going to put him on a bigger – that's going to put him in a bigger category in the history of the game. And that's a bigger pond than just the Chelsea legend, you know, one club guy pond.
Yeah. I guess the thing is he did say in a recent interview, he's like, oh, I want to be a legend like Drogba. He mentioned those specific players, Drogba, Lampard, and Terry. So he said,
of course he's going to say that.
But he's, you know.
So, I mean, yeah, Griezmann said that about Atletico Madrid. I mean, you think he's gonna stay at Atletico Madrid for the rest of his life? No chance.
I guess just to wrap it up, I know we've gone over, but what would you rather – so back to Hudson-Odoi. Would you rather see them cash in on a player like him, sell him to Bayern Munich, or build a team around him and Pulisic, try and find a young striker, I guess? I guess I'm saying you could – like if they go for Higuain – it's kind of like they're mixing and matching still. I don't know. Are they better to try and build for the future?
Yeah. Or? So here's my answer. Keep them both. Yep. Kind of like Dortmund did. Like, I mean, they had a stable of, you know, Dembele, and I mean, they had a stable of talented young wingers, right? Mm-hmm. And played them regularly. Now, it's apples and oranges, of course. I'm just saying. This Chelsea team is aging, and especially in the attacking side, it's reaching its expiration date. You're losing Hazard. So here's what you have. You have to replace a superstar, and neither of those kids do it, for sure. But you also have to replace the not role players, but the sort of sidekick next level stars William and Pedro, right? So you sell Hazard. You already have Christian Pulisic. And Odoi, right? So you sell Hazard, you buy the main man central striker with that money. You buy an 80,000 or an 80 million pound striker, right? Mm-hmm. And then you go get the finished product that's 4 years ahead of those two young guys as a winger, mm-hmm. right?
To replace Hazard.
Yeah. And you say, this is what we have, guys. This guy's starting. Yeah. Learn from him. Be around him. Imitate him. Get to know him. He's what you need to be right now, for sure, to start, both of you. But he's what you need to be starting regularly in 2-3 seasons. That's what I would do if I was the director of football. And those players, by the way, if you replace Eden Hazard with a lights out, at least 20 goal a year striker, you're going to attract that winger that you need at that next tier, and then you have these two talented kids and build the team around that. Yeah. I would do that, but I mean they've been recently a short term, and we know why. Coaches don't stay very long, and if you're a coach that doesn't stay very long, why would you commit to players that are young? Mm-hmm. I mean, that's the thing at Chelsea. One of the reasons all these young players never play is they buy coaches that are short term coaches that. They buy them because they're good at dealing with huge superstars, right, and veterans. You're not going to get a guy where they're only staying for a year or two based off of the pressure to succeed at Chelsea. You're not going to get them to say, I'll commit to, you know, you couldn't do like what Pochettino's done at Spurs or Klopp has done at Liverpool. You can't say, I'm going to play Trent Alexander-Arnold through bad games. He's going to be good enough, I promise you. I'm going to play Dele Alli through a bad season in his sophomore year, you know, because he's good enough. You can't do that at Chelsea, or you haven't been able to in the past.
Yeah. That's a good point.
We'll see. All right, one young player that it was in London, but not it was not Chelsea. It was Arsenal that gave him a lot of faith and let him play as a teenager in a very talented team. Cesc Fabregas, when he got to Arsenal, I remember the first games. Like, I remember seeing this kid, and next to like. You know, some of the gigantic, like the Keons and like some of the gigantic trees that like the end of a generation that was being replaced and like Campbell and some of these guys and looking at Cesc Fabregas and thinking, how on earth is this kid going to play in one of the most physical leagues in the world in a defensive midfield role in like a flat four? Mm-hmm. And it was remarkable. I mean, I was from day one mesmerized by him. I mean, his composure, his intelligence, He's up there now. This is La Masia, right? Like this is Barcelona, kind of like a little bit hardwiring, like the Xavi, like the Iniesta, Busquets. Yeah. Kind of, like some of it is the beauty of that sort of Spanish school, that mind, the cognitive ability, and some of it's, you know, his own personality and whatnot. But I just, what a career, and I know it's not over, but what a career he had in England between Chelsea and Arsenal, and what he was asked to do in the hiatus, but going to Barcelona, asked to do something completely different. You know, I mean, it's just his versatility, his vision, his ingenuity, his touch. He's a goal scorer. He's a holder. I mean, he's just a brilliant, brilliant player. He's kind of one of those players. If I had a kid that said, you know, I want to be a central midfielder, which is kind of like not really a position, but I want to play in the center of the park, I'd say, watch this guy. Mm-hmm. Watch Cesc Fabregas. Yeah.
The question I brought with the Robbies the other day is, you know, he's definitely had a great career, there's no doubt. And you mentioned how young he was when he came in.
I mean, he was like 17 when he was starting.
I think he might have been 16
his first appearance was like in a League Cup game as a 16-year-old.
So he had a ton of hype around him, obviously. Do you think he fully lived up to it, or were there little blips where, and again, this might be more of just showing you how difficult it is to be considered an elite player such as Messi and Ronaldo. Yeah. And you can't compare him to those two because they're different positions. But do you think he lived up to it? He went to Barcelona. It struggled a little bit. Yeah. And Chelsea is where he won the most trophies, and he sort of reinvented himself, you could say.
I get the question, and my answer is no. My answer is yes, he lived up to it. I mean, my answer is no. Like, that thinking is broken logic, and I'll tell you why. When you have a phenom, the reason you have a phenom is not because they're this good, which means they're gonna compound and grow to be this good. It's not a graph where, like, because they're 16 and another 16-year-old, they're this much better. As that 16-year-old gets better, they get better too, and it continues to climb. Really, all it means is, like, there's a level, like there's a cap on how good you can be, and Cesc and other incredibly talented young players got higher up the talent experience composure level faster. Mm-hmm. The ones that you worry about, like Freddie Adu, for instance, like, you know, these are like big sort of cautionary tales of being overhyped. You know, he was overhyped based off of success at a youth level. Mm-hmm. So, like, That one's kind of wrong, because we accepted him as a phenom before he had played a professional game of soccer. And so that's where you run into this issue. They didn't live up to it. The not live up to it thing is, like, if like Wayne Rooney, we hear this argument with Wayne Rooney, where, like, Wayne Rooney, how he was as a 16, 17-year-old, should have become a Messi, Ronaldo, like, level. You should be talking about four or five players, and he should be in that mix. Mm-hmm. That one I still push back against, because he's the all-time leading goal scorer for one of the most successful clubs in the world, all-time leading goal scorer for his national team. Mm-hmm. Really, why people say that is, in tournaments, he was either injured and didn't perform or didn't come up with the goods. He's world-class. Mm-hmm. He's a world-class player and had an incredible career, and I don't see it as a disappointment, but I'm not English, so that's different. With Cesc, that's how good he is. So, like, the fact that he was that good at a young age doesn't mean now you set a height that he has to get to, and if he doesn't reach it, he failed or underachieved. You have to look at it the other way and say, there's only so high you can get as a player. Some players get higher than their talent. Mm-hmm. You know, some players completely overachieve. And then there are some players that get lower than their talent. But Cesc Fabregas just got close to the top of his talent level and what he was capable of and what he could do in a big game at a really young age, and continued to improve a little bit. But he just reached his top level pretty early in his career. So that's where I kind of push back on this idea of, like, because he was so good as a 16-year-old, shouldn't he have been one of the best players in the world? I mean, it just doesn't work that way, especially for a player of his position. Now, if you're a forward, it's kind of a different world. Yeah, yeah. Like, a goal scorer is a different beast, but, like, a center back, an outside back, a defensive midfielder, a six, an eight. I mean, the magic is how good he was early, and I think if you go to that Barcelona team, it was littered with players that you know, are like Iniesta's a different example. Mm-hmm. So Iniesta wasn't as good as Cesc or as ready to step into roles at such a young age as Cesc. But his highest level was always going to be a little bit higher than Cesc Fabregas in terms of like their ultimate potential. And he just, his was a slower progression to get there. And he got there later in his career.
Xavi too. I think both Xavi and Iniesta kind of progressed a little bit more gradually.
So I don't see like Xavi and Iniesta as having, you know, achieved more of their potential than Cesc Fabregas. I just see they all achieved their highest level. And Cesc got there crazy early before those guys. And then they slowly caught up and surpassed him.
Yeah, I think that's an interesting thing about Cesc is he's kind of beloved, maybe not Barcelona as much, by all the clubs that he's played at. But there's also some mixed emotions with that. So with Arsenal, when he kind of took over, started the torch was sort of passed to him after those great players before that had won all the Premier League titles and such. He never really won any major trophies. I think he won one FA Cup trophy. It's really the only trophy he won with Arsenal, and that was early in his career.
Yeah.
He never helped continue the Wenger winning
He was the first of the big players that left to go get trophies elsewhere.
Yeah, exactly.
And Nasri, then.
And then it didn't help matters when he came back 3 years later or whatever to come play for Chelsea.
Yeah.
So Barcelona, everyone thought this is great. He's coming back home after playing for La Masia. He was supposed to take the reins from Xavi and Iniesta once they were done. But like you said, those guys weren't ready to go.
Busquets. Yeah, I don't think so.
So he ended up playing as more of one of the kind wingers or forwards.
Sometimes he played false nine.
So he never really fit in there. He still won a La Liga title.
Well, there were better players than him. He just wasn't – like ultimately he wasn't needed. I think in the long term he's a better player than Busquets. I mean, they're different. So it's not an apples to apples. But – when he came along, Busquets was needed for a role he played better than Cesc Fabregas.
Exactly.
And Xavi and Iniesta are better than Cesc Fabregas. So it's like Barcelona's a tough one because it's like it seems like a failure. But in reality, like a player as good as Cesc Fabregas was not needed with what he brought in the positions he was in.
Yeah. And again, I think it was just I think people maybe expected that Xavi would decline a little bit and Cesc would then just slide in there and it would be, you know, Cesc, Iniesta, and Busquets in the midfield. But the problem is Xavi kept playing pretty well.
Yeah, totally.
He couldn't fit all four of those in. And then with Spain too, you know, you mentioned his versatility because the 2010 World Cup, I believe he didn't start any match in the 2010 World Cup, but I think he might have come into every single game and he set up the winner for Iniesta in the final when he came in as a sub.
He's a brilliant player.
And in the 2012 Euros, they didn't have a striker. Villa was injured. That's when Torres was starting to go. And so, but he ended up playing that false nine a lot, and I think he might have started most of those matches there and helped win that. So it just shows again he would fit. And you think to Chelsea when he comes in, he plays more of a deeper role.
Yeah,
and he plays that role Mourinho specifically kind of carved out for him. As you come here, we're gonna find a way to win a title, and they did. And I think that's what the year he had 20 over 20 assists or whatever. So it's interesting the way he's found ways to fit into teams, even though they've been sort of different positions for him. So it's pretty good.
Brilliant career. One of my favorite players to watch. And then lastly, Petr Cech. I mean, just, you know, as good as it gets in what you want from a goalkeeper. Mm-hmm. But it's funny, like his career ends as the evolution has now set in that would mean in this modern day he wouldn't be good enough for some of these bigger clubs. But if he started over again in this new paradigm, his feet would be better. You know, it's kind of like he was the best of the other generation, and now big clubs are going to be looking for this new, this new style of goalkeeper that can basically be your center forward if you want them to be.
You think he's one of the best goalies of all time?
I mean, that's tough.
Yeah,
that's tough. I mean, there's an all-time category that I don't think he's in, and he's in that category just below it of some of the best goalkeepers to play the game, but like the small group of best all-time, I don't think he's there.
Probably Chelsea's though, no?
Yeah, probably. Yeah.
I mean, he won four Premier League titles, I think four FA Cups in the Champions League with them as well.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah. I
Not
think,
a bad
I mean, listen, you could say he's one of Chelsea's best all-time players, for sure.
He might, by the way, he might sneak back in as a starter for the end of the season. Leno's not. I know.
He's struggling a little bit recently.
So it'd be that'd be nice.
Well, the Arsenal project in general is starting to hit a little.
That'll
bit
be another nice topic for.
Yeah, we'll do that next week.
Pod, but no, it'd be cool to see him actually come in. He's going to get starts at the end because that's what, especially now that he announced his retirement. But maybe it'd be cool. It'd be interesting to see if I don't want Leno to struggle just for this, but if he comes in and maybe sort of helps get Arsenal back on track a little bit and maybe finish the season as a starter and not just get some sort of farewell matches.
Yeah, yeah. But thank you, Cesc Fabregas. Thank you, Petr Cech, for all the amazing games and performances over the years that you gave us in the Premier League. Good luck, Cesc. As Thierry Henry has already joked, he's gonna not be afraid to punish you if you make mistakes. But I'm interested to see what he can do in the next chapter of his career with an incredible coach. And I know that it's been a rocky start for Thierry Henry. I think Thierry Henry is gonna be a really good coach. So I'm wishing my friend Thierry good luck. And Cesc, I'm gonna now watch more Monaco games because I love watching you play. And Petr Cech, thank you so much. And Tad Potters, stay on your feet.